Hey guys, you remember when we were wondering aloud if Technical Boy was like subordinate to media since tech is like a layer of media and he's all kind of social media?
Yeah.
I think we got our answer.
Yeah, we also learned something just as interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we learned who Media and Technical Boy are both subordinate to.
It turns out everyone's got a boss.
Everyone's got a boss. Hello and welcome to The Dominant Paradigm, an American Gods podcast, episode 5, Lemon Scented You. We are your hosts,
Dwendy,
Andrew Cersini,
and Tosin Anofowoken.
We just watched the 5th episode of Starz American Gods titled Lemon Scented You. We assume you have as well. Total spoilers ahead. Let's dive into the aftertalk, but first let's catch you up on how to reach us. Here are our online links. You can follow us on Twitter at Gods Podcast or just hashtag The Dominant Paradigm. Our Facebook page is Podcast American Gods. You can write or send us a voice memo at starsamericangodspod@gmail.com. And you can always check us out on Geeks of Doom. If you add us on iTunes, you can like us and leave us a review. That's how we get our notice for our show. So, Dwayne, why don't you start us off by giving us a brief recap of what this episode was about?
All right, Lemon Scented You. We see a tale of people migrating over the land bridge from Asia to North America. The road's hard, but they bring their god, which is represented by an animal skull on a plinth. They bring that along the way. They assimilate to the nature and the habitat of the new world, and as they do, their god is forgotten, and because it's forgotten, it dies. And the kind of the big pull quote from there is that gods are great, but people are greater. It's in their hearts that gods are born, and to their hearts where people return, where gods return. So in the real world, so to speak, Laura and Shadow meet for the first time since she's died. Shadow confronts her about her affair with Robbie. Shadow rejects being her puppy. And then Shadow and Wednesday are arrested by law enforcement and are confronted by the new gods. That's Technical Boy, Media, and their leader, Mr. World. Everybody's got a boss. The new gods offer Wednesday a truce on their terms. It's tied to North Korea. And Mad Sweeney confronts Laura about the coin he gave Shadow. He attacks her, and he gets arrested himself. And Mr. World gives Shadow, you know, on Wednesday this merger offer, but leaves them in the police station, freeing Shadow on Wednesday from their arrested kind of situation. And finally, as they try to get out, Shadow's attacked by a tree. Getting no resolution on that, but that's pretty much what went down during the ep. What do you guys think?
Let's talk about some of these salient points of this episode here. Tosin, first of all, why is this episode called Lemon Scented You? Last week we proposed that perhaps it was called Lemon Scented You because of maybe the sort of the increasing foul stench that Laura is starting to have since she's been deceased. But we learn in this episode that that's not why it's called that. Why is it called Lemon Scented You?
Well, I mean, I think one way of looking at it is, you know, lemon scented can be sickly sweet. And we see that throughout various elements of the episode, right? We see that in the conversation where Mr. World and his gang or cohorts are trying to convince Wednesday, as well as even Shadow, to join their team, and they talk about like sort of the rockets, and these are things where I think Wednesday put it very succinctly when he started talking about you know, an oyster and the pearl and sort of the dirty things underneath the nails that still exist. So I think that's kind of one of the elements in which the episode bases its name on. We also do know that, you know, throughout the sort of introduction, there is also like a sickly sweet, you know, conversation between, you know, Shadow and Laura, trying to really delve into why she took the certain actions and if she ever really cared about him or continued to be a puppy. So those are a few areas. Do you guys have any others?
I have a thought on this. I know Media mentions Lemon Scented You in the context of basically marketing and repackaging Wednesday's being as part of this merger. And Lemon Scented You Lemon Scented You is feels to me like a direct reference to a marketing term used to package, for example, you know, oven cleaner or deodorant spray, anything like that, which to me falls right in line with what Mr. World and Media and Technical Boy represent, is this sort of repackaging of this
of devotion, of favor, of godliness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's pretty interesting because I see, you know, Wednesday describing himself as a lemon, right? He's, you know, citrusy. He comes from a, you know, thorny tree. So maybe he's bright on the outside, but he's still a pain to deal with.
Also, like a lemon, he's a little bit broken, right? So that's like when you think about cars that are lemons, I bought a lemon or whatever. He's... Of course, he's like a grifter, and he's got like his things, but there's something very broken about Wednesday. Like from the time Shadow picked him up, he's a used god. He's broken. Maybe it's a stretch, but I kind of feel like if you were gonna pick a side, you know, on its face, it feels like Shadow picked the wrong one, and then he got the lemon.
Yeah, what did you guys think of the stylized opening sequence that we see?
Yeah, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about the opening sequence, and that's in part because when we first started watching the episodes, we got screeners, and those screeners didn't have this edited into it. But I gotta say, it's wildly more exuberant and less melancholy than the show itself feels.
Mm-hmm.
And while I do enjoy its kind of like zippity-doo-dah electronic-iness and the whole image of the totem pole, since totems are kind of the beginning of religion. When you study religion, it's one of the things you pick up. Early religions were built on such things. I thought it was, I've always thought it was pretty interesting. And I don't know, what'd you guys think stylistically? I mean, Andy, you edit stuff all the time. So, I mean, what are we thinking here?
Well, I mean, the thing that I noticed most about the, and again, we're talking about the opening titles of the show, which we have not commented on before, but to me, I love what it represents. It represents the merging of the new gods and the old gods, because you see the old gods like Shiva and Krishna and Jesus and a lot of the classic old gods, but they're also in a way each of them carry aspects of them of the new, like Jesus is represented by an astronaut on a crucifix, for example. So
right.
it's like
a MTV reference there, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely and it's all in this totem, as you mentioned. So it's this merging of this of the new gods and the old, which is appropriate for this particular episode in the that we have Mr. World's offer of merging Wednesday with his team.
Yeah, and one other interesting thing is you're talking about merging. I think when you're looking at the opening sequence, you're kind of reminded that you know, they're taking effectively an old world style of storytelling, the book, and then you've got this new world style of storytelling, the TV. And as this episode shows, and maybe even the last one, Get Gone, they're all about TV. Like, this retelling is not going to be kind of like, remember Harry Potter, the first movie? It was just like a complete like copy of the book. They're going whole hog, let's say, on this TV show and representing it as a TV show. And as much as I normally hate that, I'm loving it this time. And I think that's an interesting thing. They're, when I watch the opening sequence, it just reminds me that they're taking this story that's so focused in literature. You know, one of Neil Gaiman's few prose works, compared to his you know, long career as a comic book guy, and we're taking it to a new platform, TV, which is, you know, it's just one more thing to think about. But speaking of TV and media, Media herself mentions mass delusions in a pretty interesting way that really popped out to me. I think she says, "I was there when the Martians invaded," in a reference to War of the Worlds. And she said that she was born, you know, mass delusions began when she began. It's almost as if the media's ability to capture people, their imagination, their time, you know, she earlier said that there was the TV was, you know, all the time they spent on TV is better than lamb's blood as a sacrifice. It seems as if media was born through this idea of mass delusion. And in fact, you know, when we see her, for instance, you know, at first we see her as Lucy, and he actually, you know, media actually corrects him when he goes, "Oh, you're Lucille Ball." And she goes, "No, I'm Lucy Ricardo," because she is the illusion. She's not the actual actor. She's right. The illusion of the family that is in the I Love Lucy show. Likewise, when we see her as kind of this David Bowie figure, you know, or when we see her as Marilyn Monroe, it's the illusion of these people, not the actual people. And this kind of thing where people get deluded into believing that this stuff is real, in fact, War of the Worlds was real. There's a lot of research on it, but, you know, media, people trust media so much that when War of the Worlds was read aloud, converted and adapted into radio back in 1938, there were people who actually believed that Martians were coming to get us.
That's right.
And so I thought that was pretty crazy.
I think it's interesting in this context that media never presents as a, like, her own being. She's always represented as somebody else. Like, you know, in the first episode that we saw her in, she was Lucy Ricardo. In this episode, we saw her as a David Bowie type. You could say David Bowie, Marilyn Monroe as well. She's representing herself as faces of mass media. So, it's an interesting, I wonder if we're ever going to get to see the actual media, like what media looks like outside of her face, or if that is it, just ever changing being.
Yeah, it's also weird because, you know, with Mr. World or with Technical Boy, they have two faces, right? They have like a face that's like really unpleasant to look at.
Yeah.
And they have the face they present to the world. And media is actually not interested in showing us her, let's call it like a new god face, whatever that kind of messy new god face is. You're right, we never ever see it. So that was pretty interesting. But what's also cool is how powerful she is, and we'll talk a little bit about how strong she is later. But speaking of who else is strong, Laura's pretty damn strong. Right?
Like, yeah, she seems to be getting stronger as the episodes go by, to be honest.
Right, because when she first comes out of the grave and she attacks those henchmen to save Shadow's life, you see her punch somebody or kick somebody, and she's putting all of her like physical might, like Emily Browning as an actress, like that kick to a man's crotch is like, I'm going to kick your crotch really hard right now, boom, and then like she destroys him. But here, she's got Mad Sweeney on her, and she just kind of takes her fingers and goes flick,
yep.
And he flies across the room as if he were a fly, and we know about the imagery of flies from last week. But I have a question for you guys. So she's really tough. For whatever reason, she decides not just to get Mad Sweeney arrested, but she actually decides to go through the whole process of getting sent to the morgue. She's okay. But then she breaks out of the morgue, let's call it the slab, whatever the place where they keep the bodies. And she has to punch her way out, so to speak. Why? I mean, the whole killing of the morgue worker, why did they decide to kill the morgue worker? I mean, the obviously she couldn't see that he was there, so the writers decided that he was going to get killed. Like from a narrative perspective, what did that say to you guys, if anything?
I think this it feels to me like another sort of Fullerism. But other than that, to say that she's definitely not dead. She is more powerful than she even realizes she is. So mm-hmm. I do feel like there is something there about her gaining power. So who knows if that will continue, that trend will continue through the rest of the show. But you know, morgue worker, he's sort of like a dime a dozen. He's a red shirt.
He's a red shirt. Yeah, yeah. I thought that was pretty interesting. One
just
thing
comic
about
relief, right?
Yeah. So that's probably it too. One last thing I'll say about her is, yes, we see her being more powerful, but Mad Sweeney gives us kind of a dour prediction about her. As powerful as she is, she's not going to stay that way. Like, she's, you know, he's like, if you keep on soaking yourself in water, it's only going to happen faster, but you're rotting, you're falling apart. And that's a big downer, right? Mm. It's like every day is going to be better than the day after it. Every day is better than the next, as I heard one comedian say once. And so that's pretty interesting. But how's Shadow dealing with all this, Tosin?
Well, he's clearly struggling. Shadow is having a hard time recognizing what is real life. Is this the real world? Is this real life? Or what's reality? And, you know, first time we see that is, we've seen in the other episodes, of course, but in here, you know, when he first stumbles on Laura, he's a bit taken aback and trying to figure out if she's real. He tosses a pillow at her to see if she actually is not just a fiction of his imagination.
That was funny.
Yeah, that was a very good Laura reaction. You could definitely see the actress coming through there in that scene. And then the second time is when he's in the holding location, the interrogation room, when Mr. World comes in. He says that to Wednesday, you know, whether or not this was also real. So he's struggling. He's having a difficult time, but, you know, yeah. He wants to take some time to get his thoughts together. He said that to Wednesday while Laura was in the room. And it just doesn't seem like he's getting any time to do so.
Yeah, I will say this about what's going on there. Once again, Ricky Whittle, I feel like he has one of the toughest jobs because he's kind of had to remake Shadow in his own image. And Emily Browning's doing the same thing with Laura. These kind of, let's call them native personalities to the story as opposed to conjured up from before. But, you know, again, in the book, Shadow is so unfeeling that when Whittle is looking at Laura and he throws the pillow, I'm like, I'm surprised because I didn't expect that to happen, but I also feel like I got that more than I thought I'd get it. Like if I were presented with a dead person that I had loved, right, in a room, and I would, first of all, I don't know how I wouldn't freak the fuck out and pee all over myself, but still, the whole throwing of the thing, and then the way Laura reacts back to him, like she's on some level she can't believe she's dead. Like she does take things very well, like Shadow. But at the same time, this whole world that's just so ridiculous and messed up, I think that Whittle is being challenged as an actor to try to pretend to be a real person dealing with this stuff.
Yeah, well, we've also learned some new things about Wednesday in this episode. Like he pretty much throws Shadow under the bus when he gets locked out. Like, well, but we knew a little bit of that when we saw Wednesday board the plane in the very first episode, is that we know that he knows how to think on his feet and sort of get himself out of scrapes. What we did learn in this episode is that he will do that exclusively for himself.
I mean, what did he say? He's like, oh, that he like the cop was like, oh, Shadow kidnapped you? Is that what's going on or whatever? And then he goes back and forth between kind of being this crazy old coot and this straight talking guy, but when he talks straight, the stuff he says is so crazy. That is, you know, I'm trying to recruit old gods,
right,
all that stuff. That you can't imagine that the guy who's there would actually believe him. You know, so it's just like he's pretty zany. We also learn one last thing about Wednesday. He's like chatting with ravens. Like the ravens just knocking on his door, like he's Edgar Allan Poe or something.
He's like Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah, he's got the Dr. Doolittle action going on. Would you guys, I mean, that really came out of nowhere for me. What'd you guys think?
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, it's, I don't think, it may be, I don't know if it's any spoilers to talk about how this is in the book, but I don't remember this, that particular aspect of Wednesday being in the book. So.
Yeah, it was pretty out there.
I don't think they really called it out in the book, but I think this gives us a little bit more insight to sort of Wednesday's powers. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we haven't really, it has been quite clear if he's just a crazy old kook or if he's had additional sort of godly powers, but I think we kind of learned a bit more about that.
That's funny you say that, because Andy, you're about to take us into the big picture where Tosin's going to lay out some Wednesday, huh?
We've talked about the salient visual points of this episode. Let's move on to the big picture where we talk about how these events that we saw in this particular episode impact what we know about the overarching story arc of the show, Tosin, why don't you start us off? Let's talk about some of the supernatural characters that we meet in this episode.
Yeah, so let's continue and talk a little bit about Wednesday. He did reveal himself in this episode to be...
Finally.
Yeah, Grimnir, another name for Odin. He does have sort of one good eye, and the other is a glass eye, or sort of fake-looking eye there. One of the things that Wednesday originally said is like, hey, what's today? It's Wednesday. It's my day, so call me that. So, his day is Wednesday. Odin is the father of all gods. A lot of people call him the All-Father. Mm-hmm. God of, I believe it's war and sacrifice.
Yeah, and knowledge.
And knowledge as well, too.
Because he sacrificed in the history, he sacrificed himself to himself in order to get knowledge. And he's got two ravens, and those two ravens help him see everything that goes on in the world.
Yeah, and that's how he gains a lot of sort of the access to knowledge. So from hearing the ravens knock on the door, they gave him a bit more information there. And, you know, one of the things that we know about Wednesday is the gods only exist, sort of like what we learned in the beginning, when people believe in them. So it's not their cash or the money or the presents or gifts they give you. It's their faith. And when the faith runs out, they sort of disappear.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like what's also interesting about this episode is, so that's Odin. We also meet Mr. World. And before I get into Mr. World, because mostly we have questions, we don't know what the hell he's about. But when you think about Mr. World and Odin in this case, or Wednesday, for the first time, you know, we're five episodes in. It's an eight-episode season, so it was, pretty much two-thirds of the way in there. We're seeing the heads of these two movements, basically the nemeses of the show, finally seeing one another eye to eye. I thought that was pretty interesting. And Wednesday, as usual, it plays it cool. But let's get to Mr. World, played by Crispin Glover, famed actor.
Yes.
Well-known for, kind of like somewhat like kooky roles, like in Back to the Future. I think that's super iconic. And then he managed to play, the bad guy in Charlie's Angels for a time or two. And in both of those movies, he looked exactly the same age. So I don't know what's going on with him.
I don't think he ever ages, honestly.
He looks exactly even now he's, he might have put on a pound or two because he's, he's a little older, but he looks as fresh as he did
in Back to the Future. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it was exactly. And he's got this incredible, I'm talking about the actor now. He's got this incredible power to captivate when he kind of nods his head down and looks up at whatever the camera is doing, and he starts talking. You're just compelled to listen to everything he has to say. But guys, questions like what is he, right? He seems to know everything. He talks about he waves his hand over Shadow, and he can tell that Shadow's mother had like 80 something sexual partners during her lifetime, which I'm not gonna lie, that seems like a lot. That
disturbing.
Seems like a lot. Huh?
It's a disturbing detail for him to bring up.
Yeah, to lay that out. And then there's also like, your name is Shadow Moon. He goes into his details and stuff like that. He seems to know everything. And then he goes into this weird discussion about salsa, right?
Yeah.
this thing where it's like, you can get it chunky, you can get it like sweet, but it's all salsa.
It's
right?
A metaphor.
So it's kind of like, yeah, it's a metaphor. And it kind of seems like a metaphor for what though? Like commodification, globalization, capitalism? Like what do you guys
see? It feels like, again, going back to marketing. It's like a metaphor for I think what the idea that he was trying to get across is that there is one product that we are selling and you can get it in a number of different varieties, but you know what? It's the same product underneath the label, no matter what you call it outside the label. And that's
all
what
the
we're
sugar
selling.
Water is Coke.
Exactly.
I guess based on what you're saying, I know, Tosin, you might agree or not agree. It's almost like, as gods or as if even if Mr. World is not a god or media is not a god, they're like these kind of new entities that we pay attention to and give fealty to. At the end of the day, they all want the same thing. They all want our time, our attention, and our effectively like our worship, and he's like, it doesn't matter who you are. We all want the same thing, and people have to give it to us, whether they're going to give it to Marilyn Monroe or Kim Kardashian or Jesus. It's all the same kind of worship.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting because in a couple, you know, areas when they were first entering the room, Wednesday is like, don't talk to him, don't give him any of your attention. Mm-hmm. Essentially, potentially meaning like, don't empower him.
Right,
is kind of where you're getting at there. Also, going back a little bit, I think it was pretty hilarious when they're like, oh, your mom's had these many partners, and then Wednesday just gives Shadow a look, being like, oh, really? You know, like, damn.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also weird that there's almost like you've got this situation where, you know, he whatever technology was used to capture Shadow was also used for some other stuff. And in a world where we're constantly talking about our data, mm-hmm. right? Our being surveilled by companies, what we're buying gets tracked, what we're doing online gets tracked. It's kind of like he's got this sort of, let's call it like, you know, Yahoo, Google thing, and Mr. Wednesday is telling Shadow, hey, opt out of that, man. You don't want any part of that kind of Facebookification of your situation. Not easy to do, and so Shadow engages. But that's interesting, this whole idea of like what you do with your data, your personal security and stuff like that. But we have one more supernatural thing that we saw. I mean, we've seen it once or twice before, but we thought it was a dream. Andy, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, so Shadow's leaving the where he's being held, and he gets attacked by a tree. I mean, this is a tree that has attacked other police officers in the station, and it attacks him as he's trying to leave. It tries to pull him in, and we are not sure. I mean, I know what this tree is because I read the book, but we're not sure in the context of the show yet what this tree is, except for the fact that we've seen it in Shadow's dreams in the Bone Orchard. So we can surmise that this is the same type of tree that Shadow saw in his dreams, and for some reason it seems to be calling to him, dragging him to a fate that is perhaps destined for him.
In the book, that all comes down very differently. We'll talk about that later. But this idea that the tree was going after Shadow, and they didn't really let us truly know, you know, what happened when or if they walked out of there, right? So
yeah.
the episode kind of leaves you kind of wondering what's going on. That tree is clearly extremely powerful, and our friend Media is pretty powerful too, right, Tosin?
Yeah, I mean, we once knew that Media was pretty powerful in what she did in the superstore, taking over all the TVs. But now she's learned to project herself on walls and other things. So as we kind of suspected, Technical Boy is a subordinate to her, who she like keeps in line, tells him, you know, gets him into her sort of world, tells him to come apologize, and then when he's not compelling as well as they would like and kind of rebelling against Mr. World, she blows him a kiss that like knocks out his teeth and kind of beats him up. Media is also a big storyteller through sort of Marilyn Monroe, David Bowie, the Korean montage, where she like takes over the room and just fills it with sort of color and sort of really happy and light vibes, right? A lot of sort of positive reinforcement, so to speak.
Yeah, it's like you know what it is? It's very much that lemon scented thing. It's quote unquote positive reinforcement, but she's kind of telling you what you need to do, and if you don't do it, she'll make you do it. And that was pretty crazy.
Break down for us, what exactly is she telling him to do?
So, I mean, when it comes to Technical Boy, she wants him to apologize, but when it comes to Wednesday, it seems very much like she's like, hey, look, the truce is going to happen because, you know, you need people to worship you and we need people to worship us. So what if we gave you your own kind of little geographical slice of the pie? There are 25 million people in North Korea. We can rebrand you, you know, satellite, whatever. You can be the new thing there. You know, they're all atheists. They're all ripe for you anyway, I guess is kind of what she's saying. But what was really interesting is that I thought about it, and in our world here in the U.S., you know, whether in Europe or whatever, where's the one place where Media can't go right now, right? It's
a blacked out country like North Korea.
Exactly. I mean, you have people catching Western media in Iran. You know, in China, people are using, you know, they have the Great Wall of you know, Great Firewall of China for the internet, but people are still seeing American stuff. But in North Korea, it's very, very difficult. And the idea that she's like, we'll just sequester you in North Korea is interesting, especially because, you know, you could throw all the you can throw them in there in North Korea. And, you know, whether it's Odin satellites or whatever, you can redo all that. But and he can get favor from those 25 million people. Not a small take if you're a con man like him. The problem is, how stable is that situation, right? At every moment in our world, we're talking about, is there going to be nuclear war with North Korea? Is there going to be this? Is there going to be that? So Wednesday's smart enough to know that that's not a solution he's completely interested in, or at least not one that he's going to lay out that he's interested in. So that was pretty zany. But speaking of Wednesday and media's plan, Wednesday reveals his own plan. I mean, he literally says to the police officer, he's recruiting gods to battle with other gods. I think the quote says, why were you in Chicago? Says the law enforcement guy. And Wednesday writes, I was recruiting a tired but still vital god of death into a war against new gods who very rightly fear him as much as they should fear me, but don't. And, you know, he goes into some other things. He talks about how he's got Mr. Nancy on his side. Mr. Nancy, yeah, is represented by people who are dispossessed, and he's not usually into that. But he basically is like, well, the people he represents really got screwed over. and then he goes into Mad Sweeney a little bit. And he talks about how dumb Mad Sweeney is, which is funny because I never think of Mad Sweeney as stupid, but he certainly has terrible judgment. So, yeah, Wednesday kind of – I mean, we find out so much about Wednesday in these, like, 15 minutes that kind of, like, keep on sneaking into this episode about who he is, about what he wants, and about who he's up against. And I guess they had to show us that in order to give us some insight into who he's up against. So that was pretty zany. And speaking of who he's up against, Tosin, you have any more stuff on Mr. World?
Yeah, he's the powerful adversary. So we learned that he's actually the controller of the VR headsets, not Technical Boy. As you noted before, he knows a lot about Shadow, a lot about everyone. And Mr. World's tech even is what happened, what they used to find Osama bin Laden. So, yeah, he's all knowing, all powerful. So it seems.
Yeah, and you can see the whole Osama bin Laden thing. If you're Mr. World and you're all about this kind of, you know, we're assuming it's this sort of globalization, capitalization, linking parts of the planet together. A guy like bin Laden is a problem for you, right? Mm-hmm. He gets away from stability and stuff like that. But speaking of unstable, Mad Sweeney, Andy.
Yeah, so we got to see a little Mad Sweeney again this week. Thankfully, a little bit of Pablo Schreiber goes a long way. I love that guy.
That's what the people he loves to say.
in this episode he basically chases his gold coin, Sun Coin, to Laura, and tries to get it back from her. Saying that the dead can't own things, and he says he screwed up. That's not the coin that you just give away. That's the coin you give to the King of America himself. And he tries to take it from Laura a couple times. Laura basically kicks his ass with a single finger. And then Laura realizes that Mad Sweeney can't take the ring. It has to be given away freely. So in order for Mad Sweeney to get his coin back from Laura, Laura has to give him the coin. But of course, the coin is what's keeping Laura alive. And if she gave the coin away, she would probably collapse dead right there. So to which Mad Sweeney says, hey, you know, it's going to happen eventually. Your flesh is going to rot. And then I'll just come in there and just take it out of your rotting corpse of a body. And that's where we left it there. So
that's it's really interesting because on some level, you know, we know she's dead, right? She's a dead person, but she's also undead. And while I love that line, the dead can't own anything, right? The dead can't own things. It's really interesting to me because she's alive enough not to be able to give it to him, but there is going to be a moment where you know, in the future, foreseeably, she'll have fallen apart or whatever. And once she falls apart, she won't have will anymore. She'll be whatever it is that happens when undead people can no longer, their bodies no longer function at all. And at that point, she's like dead enough for Matt Sweeney to get this coin back from her. That's really interesting. What's also interesting is this episode, we also see Laura kiss Shadow. And when she kisses Shadow, her body becomes alive again.
Mm.
Like the heart begins right. beating. This kind of golden glow of energy, which is reminiscent of last episode when she sees Shadow. There's a golden glow around him, mm-hmm. like he's, you know, Leroy from The Last Dragon or something.
he's the center of her world.
Right, of her universe, right?
Of her universe.
If anything, we're getting that she believed in nothing, but she believes in Shadow, theme that we saw from last week. So, and in worshiping Shadow, it kind of goes back to the original scene of the show where they said there were barriers between gods, people and their gods was lower back then. Mm-hmm. If Shadow is who she believes in, if Shadow is her god, the barrier between her and Shadow is small. And so when she gives her god, let's call it favor, right? When she kisses him or whatever, she gets an immediate benefit from that right away. And that benefit is the restoration of life. She tastes where she couldn't taste before. She feels her heartbeat where she couldn't be before. And maybe the trick to staying alive for her, to not having her body fall apart, is maintaining a connection to Shadow, which probably explains why she is so, and this is a great acting job, so incredibly sad when Shadow gets taken away by the police, but she doesn't know that. She thinks he may have just left her, right?
Yeah.
When the light goes away as she's under the water, you know, you can see this diminishment of happiness in her eyes, even though she's not like doing the crying thing. You don't see like a single tear floating on her face. So if Matt Sweeney wants that coin back, he's going to have to figure out how to keep her away from Shadow, because Shadow's exactly what's going to keep her alive enough to keep that coin. It's a weird non-virtuous cycle.
Let's take a moment to talk about our sponsor, Audible.com, the world's leading provider of digital spoken word entertainment on the internet. For the listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. And we'd like to recommend this week War of the Worlds, the radio show that changed the world by H.G. Wells and performed by Orson Welles. This is the actual 1938 broadcast of War of the Worlds that is mentioned in this episode, and it's available on Audible as a selection, and you can get that by signing up. And I'm going to give you the promotional code from our other podcast, The Drill Down. It's audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. That's audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. We're going to use that affiliate link from our other podcast, The Drill Down. And so to download that free book or any one of Audible's other 180,000-plus titles, go to audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. And using that URL helps us out on the show. Even if you don't like the Audible service, you can cancel it, and you still get to keep that book for free. Now let's look at some of the significant changes between the book and this particular episode.
You got it, right? So this week, you know, we've got a couple things that were interesting. Obviously, the lore role is greatly expanded. Wednesday can talk to ravens, like we mentioned before. When Laura is with Shadow, like we said, she literally becomes alive. And we get to see more of Mad Sweeney. We also see in the book, Laura is the person who kills the feds. But instead, it's either Mr. World's crew or the tree they control, because you're kind of hearing all this craziness, and then Mr. World's people show up, no problems. And we get to see media as more than just a, you know, an avatar of Lucy Ricardo. We get to see her as, again, Bowie, as Marilyn Monroe. And I have a feeling that they're going to take every opportunity to kind of have her represent yet more icons from the 20th century. But I gotta say, I'm loving these departures from the book. What do you guys think?
I do like them. It's definitely a what to me feels like a Brian Fuller touch having been familiar with his other stuff, he definitely adds a showiness to it. And it's interesting. I can't quite say that the additional stuff from the show adds a dimension that wasn't already there in the book. In this particular episode, I can't say so much. Maybe the tree at the end calling, trying to compel Shadow to be with the tree, is a little bit of a sort of a foreshadowing thing for those who've read the book. Mm. And the media stuff, it's really fascinating. It's an expanded role, so I can't say that it necessarily. It's nice that they gave that character the voice to sort of say some of the same things that were said by other characters in the book,
like the book version of the story,
book version. Right. I will say that also in the book version, we may not have seen them yet in this show version, but in the book version, there are at least a couple of characters that are like basically Mr. World's henchmen that we haven't seen. Right. And I don't know if we're going to see those.
Yeah, the layout of the feds is a little different. Like there's a kind of like, what is it? There's a spook and he exists like a man in black, and he exists because people believe he exists, so to speak. Like,
yeah.
Everyone believes the government has these men in black, and so therefore men in black, there's an incarnation of one in America. And I think you're right. That's also pretty key. For me, I feel as if seeing media is really pervasive. So the fact that she only is kind of shows up in the book once or twice didn't work for me very well. Mm. Like she's everywhere, and she's all throughout our experience in this country, especially today, especially if we can do this book in 2017.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty useful. I was confused about the tree, I gotta say.
Weird. And I'm not sure what it was really called for in that situation. I don't feel like it added much to this where we're at in the story.
Added confusion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been okay. I like the Laura episode much better than this one.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a lot in here where it was like the whole, like I understand that you need to get all across what Wednesday is trying to do, but I wasn't expecting it to be in such a, let me just quickly tell you my plans.
A knowledge bomb?
Expositionary
fashion.
Right.
You weren't shown. He just said it. He just told you. And we like to be shown things and not told things. So, yeah, I definitely agree with that.
But, I mean, I think the performances in general were fairly solid in this episode. I don't know. Yeah. What do you guys think?
I have to say, Gillian Anderson is doing what they call in show business a sweat act. She's like really working hard in every one of these media incarnations to sell as much as she can. I mean, she's really like, it's really a phenomenal performance on her part. Her Pablo Schreiber, to me, those two actors are really standout performers in this version.
But I like Emily Browning a lot in terms of what I've seen. I feel like, you know, she's been in a couple things that I really never paid attention to. But for a person who is I guess so small in stature but has so much power, that's an interesting thing for an actor to have to do. Mm-hmm. And then I also think that she's able to say a lot with her eyes. Like I really feel that moment when Shadow's light is leaving and she's still in the hotel room under the water, she's able to kind of convey, I don't know if it's the camera angle, I don't know what, but she's able to kind of convey that there's a disappointment, especially because just before that, in the context of the show, when she asked him if he was still her puppy, he said no. So we know what she's thinking, and she's able to communicate, like confirm what we think she's thinking, which is always kind of cool. But you're right, Gillian Anderson, she's kicking it. She's basically doing the Tatiana Maslany, you know?
Right, right.
You see it in Orphan Black, Tatiana Maslany plays the clone that's kind of changing from character to character to character in every scene. And we see Gillian Anderson doing something really akin to that. And, you know, she's a veteran actress. So she's kind of bringing, I think, almost everything she's ever done to bear on this. And I got to say, I'm definitely impressed.
Plus, I have to say, Crispin Glover, I always forget what a good actor. He's always a better actor than I remembered him being.
Yes.
It's kind of a backhanded compliment, but but every time I see him in something, he's like, oh, he isn't just a sort of two-dimensional, quirky character actor. He's got some really decent chops. So yeah. Props to him, yeah.
I always think of him like I used to think of Johnny Depp, right? Johnny Depp used to be this guy who did these kind of like, you know, Edward Scissorhand kind of roles, very different, strange, Ed Wood, all this stuff. And I always thought, okay, that was interesting. But then Johnny Depp kind of got into some of the, you know, bigger box office roles like Pirates of the Caribbean or that Lone Ranger thing or whatever. And some of the mystique went away. But with Crispin Glover, I feel like the mystique is always there. I don't know what he's going to do next, but I can't wait until he does it. And that's really something that I got from this. And also, his character, Mr. World, like his character in Charlie's Angels, has this weird sense of presence and power. Like, you don't want to mess with him. Media may be floating, but that's the guy you don't want to mess with.
Yeah, right? yeah, for sure. For sure. It's a quiet, it's a silent, like, sort of stoic power that he's got.
Right. And one last thing back to media.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that when you see her, she is whatever she's portraying.
Mm-hmm.
So even when she wants a disciplined technical boy, she blows a kiss as Marilyn Monroe would blow a kiss instead of walking over and giving him a slap across the face or whatever. She is the incarnation of whatever she's portraying. There's no other than that. That's what's so crazy about that character and how they're bringing it to bear. So yeah, I mean,
what do you guys hope or expect to see in the next episode?
Death and destruction. It's called the murder of gods, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I mean, we still need to see what's going to happen with our tall leprechaun friend.
Yeah.
Since he's just run away, we've got curious to see where Laura goes off to, or if she starts trying to chase down
Shadow.
And then I guess there's also kind of this interplay of like, okay, now we know Wednesday's plan. What is he going to try and kick it off in the gear, or is Mr. World, you know, now going to start trying to track him down and maybe do more stuff to them? So.
Yeah, I mean, like, how much time do they have before that offer, the truce offer, explodes, right? For instance, if you ever get, like, a job offer, or you could get a deal in, like, a house you're selling, you have a certain amount of time before that offer explodes. How much time is there for these guys? Mr. World basically left the situation. And I think it was great that the story basically said, Technical Boy's like, wait, we have him here. Why don't we just kill him? That's the kind of plot hole thing that that's the kind of plot hole thing that, you know, 15 years ago, no one would have cared about in a show. But audiences are so much more savvy today that Technical Boy needed to say that, and Mr. World needed to lay out that I'm going to let him go because I want them to be part of us as opposed to against us.
I'm going to speak in a little bit of coded terms because I don't want to spoil too much for people who haven't read the book. But if this is playing the way that it feels like it's playing, I think it will be very clear why this next episode is called A Murder of Gods. But it's interesting because in the book, these events don't happen in quite the same way. And there are a number of things that happen before this particular thing that I think is about to happen.
Happens. Okay, with all those pronouns.
Like they
basically, like, in the book, you're saying the whole like let's arrest people and free them and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It happens later.
Much later.
It doesn't happen this early.
They go to at least a couple of significant places in the book. Mm-hmm. Before this happens. So it's interesting that they're waiting to explore those places before, until later in the show, if they do at all.
We've only got a few episodes left. You know, this is five, so we have 6, 7, and 8. What are they going to get done in those 3 hours? That's going to leave us in a place where we're feeling somewhat satisfied, but with bated breath for the next season. That's a question.
Good question. Mm. Let's talk about some ephemera, some extra stuff that will help with your enhancement of watching this episode.
I'll hop in first. We've got War of the Worlds by Wells with an E. That's the book that you mentioned for the Audible sponsorship in the center of the show. Like we said, Orson Welles, his incredible voice, basically playing the role of a newscaster and adapting the story by H.G. Wells to the format of radio to make it immersive and visceral for his time. Andy?
Yeah, speaking of H.G. Wells, if you're interested, there's also the original, the source material for that, War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells, that's W-E-L-L-S, the original author of that. And again, a story about aliens who come to invade the Earth. It's basic, it's your basic alien invading Earth story, but quite possibly one of the first. So, Tosin, how about something else?
So we've got an article and actually an audio clip of Orson Welles talking to H.G. Wells. And it was actually pretty fortuitous how they met. They both happened to be in, you know, San Antonio, Texas, just before Halloween in 1940. This is 2 years after Welles adapted Welles' novel. And so they had an interview there, and they actually poke fun at one another. So it's a good listen.
Yeah. I'm actually excited to hear that. I haven't had a chance to, but I'm glad you were able to find it. Last thing for Ephemera, NPR has a great story about whether or not War of the Worlds was, in fact, a mass delusion. Part of media being media is media playing up the power of media. And so back in 1938, it happened. By 1940, there was a lot of discussion about how, oh my gosh, this kind of, let's face it, like it might be called fake news today or something, had taken over, and everyone was like running around like chickens with their heads cut off. Recent research, you know, as recent as like, you know, the 2010s, has shown that maybe it wasn't that the mass delusion that people thought it was. And it goes into some of the reasons why it could have been, why it may not have been, or why it's thought to be. So that's worth checking out. But I feel like that's pretty much it for The Dominant Paradigm. We should go around the room and talk about where we can find you. Tosin, why don't you start?
Well, you can find me on twitter.com/toast4321, other ramblings at toastr2d2.tumblr.com, and you can also find me at Geeks of Doom. What about yourself, Dwayne?
Yeah, check me out on twitter.com/DwayneD, D-W-A-Y-N-E-D. I've also got DwayneD.com. It's spelled the same way. And I spend some time with these guys on geeksofdoom.com. I just recently put up an Alien Covenant review. So if you haven't seen that movie or you're thinking about doing it, check that out. And Andy can tell you where to find all of us with all the other things we do. What about it, guy?
Yeah, you can find me at MrBabyMan.com or Andrew Sorsini. Do a Google search for Andrew Sorsini, my name, or Mr. Babyman, my social media handle, and you can find everything that I'm liking or linking throughout the week there. If you love what we're doing here on The Dominant Paradigm for American Gods, you'll love what we did last year for Westworld on our other podcast, Violent Delights. And if you love us in general, join us on our tech podcast, our weekly tech podcast, The Drill Down. All of these can be found on the Geeks of Doom podcast network, which is on Geeks of Doom, or just go to iTunes and search for those individual titles, and you'll find us there. And I think that's going to do it for this episode of The Dominant Paradigm. Join us next week on The Dominant Paradigm when we talk about the next episode of American Gods, which is titled A Murder of Gods. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.